From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. To someone outside college, a Facebook post asking for study aids might sound innocent, but on campus, study aids refers to prescription drugs like Adderall, Ritalin, or Vyvanse. These are drugs used by kids and adults diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But they're also good at helping focus attention and getting work done. Think of it as the mental equivalent of athletes doping to get a physical advantage. Are you familiar with it?
I'm a mom of son at Seattle U who took some Adderall and ended up in the hospital with a heart irregularity and a bill of about $8,000.
Sophomore year of college, my friend gave me $200 and two Ritalin to write her term paper for her English class. I hadn't read any of the books, so in one night, I wrote the term paper and she got a D. So she passed. It was awesome.
Putting aside for a moment the question of whether a D is awesome, that's a couple of things we heard from people who had use of prescription drugs like Adderall as a study guide. How about you? 206-543-5869, a way to enhance your mental capabilities and stay focused on intense mental work. It's 206-543-KUOW, 800-289-5869, or you can write to us. It's conversation at KUOW.org. Now, according to the National Center for Biotechnology Information, as many as 35% of students take drugs like Adderall, Ritalin, or Vyvanse illicitly. Maybe you're surprised at that number. Maybe you think it should be higher. Maybe you're one. 206-543-5869. Are you or anyone you know, have they experienced ill effects from using these drugs? With us is Dr. Cora Bruder, adolescent medicine specialist at Seattle Children's Hospital. And maybe you could explain just a little bit more for us, Dr. Bruder, about what these drugs do. They're kind of like they're a little bit like speed, right? They are a stimulant.
Yes, they are. They're actually a stimulant that's used to help people with executive function difficulties. And we are trying to talk about executive function as physicians when we prescribe this, instead of I just can't pay attention or I just can't focus, because actually we're really trying to work with people and make the right diagnosis. One of the problems that we've had in the medical community is we've been sloppy about the diagnosis of people with attention deficit disorder or attention deficit disorder with hyperactivity. And we've been careless, actually, in the medical community about these prescriptions. There definitely is such a thing as attention deficit disorder or ADHD. And those are people that have problems with executive function. That's a true issue, and it's a true problem for which medications such as Ritalin or Adderall or Vyvanse or Concerta will be helpful. But sadly, it isn't something that should be used by somebody for which it's not prescribed.
Right. That's what it's designed for. But apparently, a lot of other people are taking them and finding some advantage from taking them.
Absolutely. I mean, if you do take a stimulant and you're trying to focus, it's going to help you. And that's the thing that is the big problem. And I've noticed this from talking to my college son. I actually asked him a number of questions, and he asked a lot of his fraternity friends yesterday and emailed me back with their honest answers about their own personal use of Adderall to get through the study times and the finals. And it was quite amazing for me to hear what they would say to my son, and he would forward the email to me to say why they're using it, how much they're paying for it, and whether or not it helps.
Well, Evan Smith is president of the Associated Students of the University of Washington. He says the use of these drugs is commonplace.
It's kind of one of those things you just hear about, like somebody's going to, you know, take some Adderall and go to the library all day. It is kind of college culture and campus is when you've got crunch time and you've got a million things to do, it's what some people do.
Student president Evan Smith told us students don't find that study aids are dangerous drugs.
And I wouldn't be surprised if some students want to sort of have this line between, like, oh, I don't take hard drugs like cocaine, but I have taken Adderall, which is like a, you know, helps me study. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a divide there for some people.
And he thinks the University of Washington isn't really acting on this.
I do think the university could do more in reaching out to where students are and letting them know the dangers and the risks of that activity and what other alternatives are, like tutoring and mentorship and seeking help in study hall and different studying resources.
Evan Smith, president of the Associated Students of the University of Washington, talking about how Adderall and related drugs are really part of college culture. But, of course, study halls and different studying resources, might not seem as easy as popping a pill. So many people are, maybe you are, maybe you have. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Of course, study aids are not something brand new. For decades in college, people have taken various stimulants in order to stay up, stay focused. But now the use of these drugs that are designed for people with attention deficit disorder are being used for this, and there's some concerns about it. With me is Dr. Bruner, who's an adolescent medicine specialist at Seattle Children's Hospital. And these are prescription drugs, but it doesn't sound like it's that hard to get them.
It is not that hard to get them. And actually, it's illegal to use a drug for which you are not prescribed. But you can get this anywhere that people would sell this pill for $3 to $5 a pill. And you can take it and feel fabulous and feel like you can study for hours and hours and be focused and get things done. However, the biggest concern that we have in those who are taking it for which it's not prescribed, besides the fact you could get in trouble and it's against the law, you could actually, it could uncover a psychosis like that poor young gentleman who killed himself in Virginia that was written up in the New York Times in February of 2013. And this was a young man who took the Adderall to do better, and he was sadly pre-medical. But the problem was, and the biggest problem with this is addicting. And so if you start to feel better when you take this medicine, why would you not take it all the time? And then the interesting part about it is if you don't take it, you don't feel very good. Mm-hmm. You don't feel like you can do as well. So you take it again and you build up a tolerance, and then you need more and more.
That was my next question. So if you start to take it, all of a sudden it doesn't have the same kick. So you do have to take more?
You do have to take more. Mm-hmm. And the problem with it is that, again, it starts when you crash from when it wears off after 10 to 12 hours. You're exhausted, you're hungry, and you feel terrible. And you feel really excited about having to take it the next day.
A lot of people hear a lot of things about drugs and they kind of come to distrust them because their own personal experience doesn't kind of bear that out. It would appear with the wide usage that college students who are using this are not seeing the ill effects around them.
Oh, of course, when you think of the college brain, and it's definitely right now I want it, period. And whatever happens to someone else, it's not me, so I'm fine. And that's sadly an issue with the developing brain. The brain doesn't finish developing till age 25. So putting a medication that may cause significant impulse dysregulation in the hands of a kid who's trying to study for finals, who's sleep deprived, who might even drink a whole lot of alcohol the night before because he or she can take the study aid the next day, you are bound to have issues with unbelievable mental health issues from taking this medicine. But they might in the short run do great. So, okay, yeah. I'll keep doing it.
Dr. Bruner, how concerned should we be about this if we look at the continuum of drug issues? If we take on the one end, OxyContin and crack cocaine, and maybe on the other end, the milder end, marijuana, which has now just been legalized for adults in Washington State, although not people under the age of 21. Where would you place the use of these drugs in that continuum?
I would put it very high, Ross, because I'm very concerned that most people think that they can't function without pills. And sadly, the pharmaceutical industry has taught us that. And we are very good at figuring that if we don't have a pill to get better, then there's something wrong with us, as opposed to, you know what, I got through this day without taking anything. How fabulous for me. And it's cheating, actually. It's not fair to the kids who aren't taking the study aid, who are trying to study and get enough sleep and be proactive and getting their work done on time, for someone to just say, no, I'm not going to do anything till the end of the semester, and then I'll study all day and all night and peace out. I'm done.
Let's go to John, who's listening to us today in the University District. John, thanks for giving us a call today. Are you a UW student?
Yes, sir.
And you've had some experience with Adderall. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Basically, I was taking 20 credits, working full time, and for the 1 or 2 days that I would get off, I'd kind of take Adderall or Ritalin, and then catch up on all the work that I've missed. Due to work and whatnot. So, I agree with what the doctor said. We it's all short term. We're thinking of now and today and not so much tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
you've used it it sounds like in short spurts. You needed it this and then you stopped using it, or did you continue to use it?
That's correct. I wouldn't use it like every night or every other night. It'd be like once or twice a week. So I didn't really, I wasn't really dependent on it as much as some other people are that I was getting it from.
Did you ever see people who were using Adderall or any of these other drugs who really suffered some ill effects from it?
Yeah, I did hear her say psychosis, and I did see one of my friends who didn't have a full blown psychosis or anything like that, but it was you could tell that he would sometimes talk to himself or, you know, kind of sit off in the corner at whether it's the IMA or Odegaard. And it was really sobering when I saw that. It kind of made me restructure my whole itinerary and whatnot. And so,
would you use it again?
Yeah. Only if I really needed to, if I had to. I mean, knowing the ill effects and the long-term effects or the short-term effects, I would. I'm not going to lie, because it does really help you retain a lot of information. I mean, I read a full textbook within 2 days.
Dr. Cora Bruner is with us. Dr. Cora Bruner, what do you have to say to John?
Well, I hope you don't use it again, because I think that one of the things that you have to learn in life is that things and answers aren't in a pill, and that taking a full load of credits and a full-time job is hard to do. And so, sadly, what happens with people that get pretty stretched out like that is ultimately they can develop issues with hypertension, cardiac problems, and sleep issues, sleep dysregulation. And if we look far into the long term with people that really require medication to get through normal life, is they don't have as long or as happy a life.
John, thanks a lot for your phone call. I really appreciate it. We're just about out of time right now. But we heard the president of the Associated Students at the University of Washington say he didn't think the university was really paying much attention to this. What is your sense of whether colleges and universities, which are hotbeds of this use, are they? Is it on their radar? Are they doing anything?
Yes. In the article in the New York Times that came out this week, which was on a number of colleges that are actually refusing to fill prescriptions for attention deficit or make the diagnosis, is quite interesting. Actually, a number of colleges are also requesting significant amount of screening for students to make sure they truly have this diagnosis, and even doing urine testing on the students to make sure that they are indeed taking the medication. So if you can believe this, we're drug testing the kids to make sure they're actually taking the stimulant as opposed to getting kids in trouble for using it. They're actually getting in trouble for not using it.
Yeah.
And do I think that's a good idea? Yes. At this point, I think until we can have a better handle on the prescribing of this, I think it's really important for people with due diligence to make the correct diagnosis and to treat it appropriately.
Dr. Cora Bruner, thank you so much for stopping by. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Cora Bruner, adolescent medicine specialist at Seattle Children's Hospital. Deborah Jarvis is a chaplain at cancer clinics here in Seattle, and yesterday she was listening to our discussion about death dinners, planning for your death and how you'll be remembered. The show resonated with her because as a cancer clinic chaplain, she's used to talking to patients about issues of life and death, but she found that when she ministered to the medical staff, everyone was surprised at what they had to say about their own mortality.
The nurses were having a hard time talking with their patients about terminal illness, spirituality, and death. The charge nurse said, "I don't know what to say. I just run out of the room." She was the first in an avalanche of oncology nurses who came to me. So I offered to facilitate a group discussion about how to talk with their patients about death. I knew that until they explored their own feelings about it, they couldn't be comfortable talking with their patients. The most surprising discussion happened when I raised the questions, "Is cancer the worst kind of death? And if you had to die now, how would you like to die?" "Before this group, I would have said that cancer is the worst," one said quietly. "But after really thinking and talking about it, which I never allowed myself to do, I see that cancer can give you time to say goodbye, thank you, I love you. It gives your family some time to get used to the fact that you are going to die." "Oh, that is so true," another said. "Sudden death is horrible for your family. My brother died suddenly, and it was so unbelievable. I kept waiting for him to call me or send me a damn postcard. It took me a year to really get that he was dead. Then I started grieving. So I would pick cancer." Still another said, "I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I choose cancer too. My big fear was pain, but I know from experience that we can control most cancer pain with medication." Everyone leaned forward when the last nurse spoke. She had had cancer and chemotherapy. "The thing about having any life-threatening illness is that you find out what is really important, who is there for you, who isn't. Cancer can do that for you. Maybe because it's familiar to me, I would choose cancer. No one chose death by murder or car accident, too violent. A house fire, too painful. Drowning, too scary. 40 oncology nurses have gone through this program so far. 80% chose cancer as how they would like to die. The other 20%? The old standby. They want to die in their sleep, with the house clean, the laundry done, and the refrigerator full.
Deborah Jarvis is a chaplain at Cancer Clinics here in Seattle. That was a commentary she did back on All Things Considered in 2004. She sent us a link to it after hearing our program yesterday about dinner parties to talk about death. If you missed that show, you can find it at KUOW.org. David Hyde produces The Conversation with Arwin Nix. We get production help from Hannah Byrne, Cameron Drews, Andy Hurst, and Amber Cortez. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.